OTB Sports Radio.
This Sunday on OTB Sports Radio, we're bringing you an exclusive first listen of a special interview with Muhammad Ali's former business manager, Gene Kilroy. The last survivor from Ali's inner circle joined myself, Shane Hannan, for an hour full of great insight and never-before-told stories, such as this from just minutes before the rumble in the jungle when Ali fought George Foreman.
Ali had no fear.
And the time Ali went looking for Joe Frazier.
Ali gets out of the car, the cops said, "Where do you think you're going?" He said, "I'm looking for Joe Frazier. Where's Joe Frazier?"
Hear it first this Bank Holiday Sunday at 7 p.m. exclusively on OTB Sports Radio. Listen on offtheball.com or download the Go Loud app.
The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM.
With Aviva, Ireland's largest insurer, celebrating 10 years of iconic sporting moments at the Aviva Stadium.
The OTB Culture Hall of Fame.
Brought to you by Now TV. Watch whatever you're in the mood for.
Right, you're very welcome along to this week's edition of the OTB Culture Hall of Fame, brought to you in association with Now TV, where you can stream every episode of the unmissable new show Gangs of London on the Now TV Entertainment Pass, which also has a 14-day free trial that you can avail of. Watch whatever you're in the mood for on Now TV. We've had Andy Lee talking about Rocky III. We've had Dermot Kennedy on talking about Gladiator. We've had Steffi Preisner on talking about the US Office. We've had Louisa Harland from Derry Girls on talking about Kamara last week. And Andy Robinson talking about the Detectors this week. We've got Gavin James on talking about Back to the Future. Gavin, how are you?
I'm good, man. Not too bad. I got all my Back to the Future gadgets and everything here.
Ah, you're a proper...
I got everything.
This is not like a passing fancy.
I just think it's gas. It's my hangover movie, to be honest.
Oof. Hey, that's the greatest compliment you can pay a movie.
Pretty much, yeah. It's anything you can watch about a million times and it's still fine, to be honest. Some people it's Star Wars, some people it's Harry Potter. For me, it's kind of Back to the Future.
It encompasses all moods, I find. Like, you can be hungover, you can be unbelievably fresh after a fresh pot of coffee. It just suits everything, really.
Yeah, and they're all equally as different as, yeah, they're all gas. Because some people don't like the second one, but I love the second one. Some people don't like the third one, think they're gas. There's a train in the third one, and it goes up in the air, and it's classic. Like but anyway, how's things you use? How are you cope? How are you keeping? You might hear every so often a bang on the wall because my next door neighbors are gutting their whole house. So
no better time to be doing it.
Ah, so you got to do it. Your man's real sound. Your man the workers next door, his name is Johnny. He's dead sound.
I was going to ask about your next door neighbors because you've essentially moved your studio into your home. I don't know, maybe you always had a home studio anyway, but like you've been playing live gigs pretty loud on a fairly regular basis. So you must have a reasonable relationship with them.
Yeah, to be honest, the neighbor over here on this side is an opera singer. So she's singing all day, which is great.
Right.
I can only hear her when I'm in the Jacks. So if I'm in the Jacks, it's really calming and nice. But over there, it's, I don't think anybody lives there yet. So the walls are kind of thick anyway. But yeah, so, I mean, they got to do what they got to do. Your man Johnny's real sound. He's from the country. He was like, "Oh, how are we getting on there, Gav? How are we getting on?" Real sound fella. He said he'd do a job for me as well. But yeah, so, but yeah, no, the noise hasn't really been a problem really yet. So, I'm a singer-songwriter. I do sing really sad songs. So it's really, I'm not like Slayer. I'm not like full on Slayer every day of the week, you know. And saying that, that does happen sometimes. But anyway.
we need to get you to team up with the opera singer. This is the collaboration that's been waiting to happen.
I have been harmonizing whilst I'm on the Jacks, to be honest.
Right.
Yeah, it's actually gas because every time it's at a certain time of the day, it happens to be a certain time. Like, yeah, it's hilarious. But I definitely should. I hope she might get the hint when I'm singing with her the next time, I guess. But yeah, it's funny. It's Ave Maria and all that, guys.
Oh, wow.
Really good voice, actually. Amazing voice.
Well, that must be the best place in Ireland to live when everybody's out doing those on-street concerts. It's you and the opera singer going toe-to-toe, or, you know, is it a kind of rap battle, old school style, where you do one, she does one? Like, the neighbors are benefiting either way.
Exactly, yeah. I think my wall's about to cave in, to be honest. It doesn't sound great. But anyway, yeah, that'd be gas.
You have been keeping very busy since the whole thing started. Like, obviously, you were, I think, either in the midst of or finished a world tour over the last 18 months or so. So you've been super busy. And for a lot of us, lockdown has been kind of an opportunity to sit in and think about the world. But you've actually been doing loads of stuff, released a new video for a new single, released a new single, and then had a huge announcement today that you're actually going to be getting out and doing drive-in gigs.
Yeah, you know what? I got to finish the kind of tour in the Tree Arena at the end of February. So I got to do that. And then about 2 weeks after that, everything kind of stopped for everybody. So, I mean, the first kind of 3 weeks of that, I think, was the same as everybody else. Everybody wanted to kind of do everything, like learn Chinese and learn how to speak Italian, learn how to make bread and all that sort of stuff. But, I mean, to be honest, I kind of, all my mates that are musicians, they were like, we're going to write like 25,000 albums by the end of all this. When in reality, it was like 3 weeks of Tiger King and pizza and beer, and that was all that we really did. But now I'm getting into production, which is why I have this nice little mic set up and everything, which I wasn't doing before because I didn't really sit down and do it. So now I'm kind of going back and forth with my mates in London and recording stuff here, sending it to them, they're sending stuff to me, and it's really, in a good way, it's really productive doing that because I never did that before. I would usually sit in the room, write something, and then record it straight away, more or less. But now you sit with the song for like weeks, so it's nice. But I have found, I don't know about you lads, but I found like there's been like 3 days, like a few days of the week, I'd be like, oh, I'm really motivated. Then some days just like, I don't do anything like at all. I think everybody kind of, again, there's so many hours of the day now that like it's grand to not do anything at all, to be honest, I think, because everybody kind of, I'm trying to fill my day most of the days, but sometimes I just want to chill the beans, do absolutely nothing. So like, I keep saying to my mates, because like they're keep wake, sometimes you wake up and be like, oh, you have to fill the day with something, but yeah, sometimes it's better to just take a breather, I guess. And if you want to treat the whole thing as a breather, that's good, I guess.
Did you feel the pressure at the start, Gavin, to be productive all the time and to write 25 top class albums?
Yeah, I mean I wanted to kind of, I was looking at other people doing stuff, like my mates in London, and they were recording, then I started chatting to all of them and saying like, maybe we should take a little bit of a chill, like just not do anything for a little bit. And even like my missus is studying for a college course, and like it's the same thing. Like, so if you don't do something during the day, you might feel guilty at the end of the day because you didn't do it. Whereas you shouldn't really feel guilty for not doing anything, you know. But I have found it very productive now because I've kind of found the balance between both. Found the balance of watching like all of Netflix in one day and the next day spending all the day in front of the piano. So I have kind of found the balance in that way. But yeah, and cooking things, cooking everything. Having barbecues and stuff in class.
What are you cooking?
I have been cooking steak. Look, I'm trying to do like perfect, not every day because that would be terrible for my health, but I'm doing a lot of barbecues and kind of burgers. I made a cookie the other day, like a giant cookie, like a massive cookie.
Yeah,
it was class. It was like a medium rare cookie, so as you further you got in, it was kind of like a Subway cookie. And it grew soft in the middle. It was class. But yeah, just kind of stuff. Just cooking out of pure boredom, pretty much. But I'm learning how to cook instead of just delivering and everything all the time.
It's good for you, though. It's one of those things that, like, it was a cliche that everybody's making banana bread and bacon at the very start. But actually, it does give you the sense of, I made this thing, and actually, it's not just edible. It's quite nice. There's and it becomes quite addictive after a while.
Yeah, definitely. It's especially because, like, there's so many things. I love the really quick ones on the internet. You know, ones you find on Facebook where they just do it in, like, a minute.
And
they just show you what they're doing and you just try follow. I did like roast potatoes on Sunday and they were class. Like they just looked up like something on TikTok that was roast potatoes and it took like an hour to do, but like they were deadly. Whereas beforehand it was just like get the bagged roast potatoes. Now to be honest, I'm still going to do the bagged roast potatoes today, but because an hour is just, it's a long time to cook roast potatoes. But yeah.
What's your roast potatoes recipe?
Whatever that guy had on TikTok. I had to find it. It's just using him like, these are the best roast potatoes in the world, and then just followed exactly what he did. Pretty much.
It'd probably just take a few more goes to learn it off by heart, so you can.
Oh, 100%.
Okay, fair.
I'm a sieve, to be honest. Everything. If you tell me something today, it'll be gone tomorrow. So I haven't got a lot of space in my head.
Tell us about the drive-ins, because there's definitely a sense that drive-ins are going to be like the way of the future. We're all going back to the 50s. Back to the Future is very appropriate here. That like we're all going to end up experiencing things in our cars socially. Distance in our little family units from now on.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it was an idea I had. Me and Edison actually had a month or two ago, and I think some lads in Europe did it already. And it just seems at the start it was more to just get all the crew and get everybody paid, because nobody's worked for like months, and it's shit for like the industry, for the live music industry in Ireland, and it's terrible. So I mean, to be honest, like I've seen a lot of things online, like. About like how it's going to work. And to be honest, the lads that I have with me, Edgy is my front of house guy and Keith is my stage manager. They're like geniuses. They're like class. So they figured out a way to make it simple, because there were so many little like boo-boos when it happened in Europe. So there's a way of doing it where you have the speakers going and then you tune in your car as well, but you have to like delay all the cars listening to it so there's no weird madness going on while I'm playing at the gig. And but other than that, there's going to be like a big giant screen behind me. I'm going to be playing with my buddy Jeff, who's going to be socially far away from me, and everybody's going to be socially far away in the cars. And it's going to be great crack, to be honest. It's more for just looking after everybody in the industry because people haven't worked since February, so you know it's pretty shit for them.
Because like that's been the thing, Gavin, is that musicians have done some amazing things over the last few months, but they've all been for free. Like it's all been Zoom or Instagram Live and giving away your content essentially for free. We all know that the music streaming services don't pay enough. You're not going to get a big spike from the spike in people listening to music at home at the moment. And maybe on Bandcamp day when people are buying merch, you might've got a spike. But other than that, it's very, very hard to see where the revenue is coming from at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, the live gigs were always the main thing for most people. I mean, to be honest, I'm lucky because I can put stuff out in general. It's like my mates can't just go, I'm going to tune this guitar and put it online and then get royalties from, you know, I release boxes and I release a video for it, and I can release songs, and a lot of other artists can release music, and there's loads of different ways of doing things. But the live music industry in general, loads of weird noises coming from me. The live music industry in general, it's going to suffer so much. So any way in general to, I think my dog actually turned the telly on. That's what it is. My dog's sleeping on the couch. He rolled over on the remote and the TV is on. That is hilarious. I let him watch. I don't know. He's watching Hollyoaks or something like that. But anyway, it's the way of doing it. I mean, in reality, I was just trying to find a way of getting the industry, getting people back to work pretty much that hadn't been working for months. And there's loads of different ways of doing that. Like when it becomes more fluid and people can actually come over to houses and stuff, I was going to do the live streams again and get like my crew to be in the kitchen and the camera crew in the front room. And that's another way of doing it. And there's the Zoom quizzes and all that where you can do this very similar thing, Zoom gigs, which I think a lot of people do in America at the moment. But that was the main thing really for me. It was just looking after my own and looking after people who have been the backbone of the whole industry for the last, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, you know?
When you got to the end of your world tour, and there's a sudden end to being on the road for such a long period of time as well, on a personal level, did you just miss the fact that you were going out in front of big crowds and playing songs that you loved and they were singing the words back to you? Like that must be something that it comes to an abrupt end. There's a decompression period anyway. And all of a sudden you're like, don't leave your house. Don't go anywhere. Don't speak to anybody. Don't touch anybody.
Yeah, pretty much. It's there's nothing better. I think I was chatting to Danny from the Coronas about this, and he's dying to do a gig. He's like dying as much as I am, and as much as all the lads that are in my band are. Like it's going to be some buzz when it actually starts up again, whenever that is. Like it's going to be mental when everybody's just in the crowd and everybody's singing along to everything. And even when, like, I've never released a song without kind of backing it up with the tour or backing it up with a few gigs, because like I didn't even really get to test boxes. And usually a test, like I did play it in the Three Arenas, so that was a good little show. But I mean, nobody knew anything about it. So like the likes of, even last time we released something was Always, and we did Picnic like 2 weeks after the release, and it was main stage and it was everybody singing it back to you, and it was absolutely mental. So like you don't get that feeling obviously from a live stream, or from, you might get it from the cars, you never know. Somebody might bring like a big horn with them or something like that. Maybe not a big horn, that's a weird thing to say. I don't know. It's gonna be that the drive through gigs are gonna be a learning curve, I think. It's adapting to the situation, I think, that is at hand, I think. And I think a lot of people are gonna follow suit from what I've heard. People are gonna start doing the same thing.
That's the thing, like being the first person means that you are being a bit of a guinea pig and you are taking a bit of a risk, but it kind of feels like you feel a responsibility to the industry that, you know, like a lot of people in a lot of industries are like, well, I've kind of reached a certain level now, I look after my crew, but that's it. But actually, you know, you're genuinely taking a bit of a limb here, because if it doesn't work and there's a bit of blowback for it, you're going to put your hands up and say, look, we tried. We're the ones like trying to make things happen here.
Yeah, I mean, you can either try. I mean, to be honest, I trust my crew like a lot, because they've been with me for the last 8 years, and I know we can definitely pull it off, you know. And in general, there will be like a few learning curves when it comes to the first one and the second one and the third one. But like we have, I mean, to be honest, it depends how many we do. We could do like there could be a hell of a lot of these coming, like, which is even better for, because people will be getting paydays, all the techs and everybody getting paid for it and stuff. So it's going to be perfect for them, and just kind of even paying rent. Like, they can't, like, some of my mates that, but lads that work in the industry can't even pay the rent. So it's same with anybody else in any other industry that can't work during these times. It's the same thing. But yeah, I mean, to be honest, I mean, I could really give a fuck if people don't like me or do like me. Like, I'm gonna do it anyway, to be honest. And it's not really even about me. It's more just about looking after the industry as a whole and looking after people and hoping that other bands and other people do as well. So I think that's the main kind of thing about it, really.
Have you thought about where and when you're going to do them?
Yeah, so we're going to do them. I mean, I have them all here. So that it starts in exactly, I think it's exactly 2 months. So Limerick is the first one on July 24th. And then the 31st is Cork. And then August 7th is Tremor. And then in Waterford. And then we got Gowran, Racecourse and Kilkenny on August 10th. And then in around that, there's like matinee shows, 4 o'clock in the day. And then there's like 8 o'clock shows at night and stuff. So there'll be a lot of them going on. And then there's loads more to be announced, I'd say.
Brilliant.
But it's all, obviously, it's all HSE. The guidelines we're going by, what the government are telling us and what HSE are saying. Like, if anything happens, obviously, it'll be pulled. But yeah, we're all just pretty much, we're going with whatever they're saying.
It's an amazing innovation, Gavin. And I, like you say, it doesn't matter if people don't like me or not. I can't see anybody disliking that idea, to be honest with you. I think it just makes sense for everybody possible. And like, this should be sparking a wave of people doing something similar. My question, though, is when do you feel that we might actually have the reality of live gigs back again? Like, in this reality of social distancing, do you think it is a prospect? Like, could you have imagined playing the Three Arena, for example, with social distancing being implemented? Because I see that there was reports from Ticketmaster in the United States a couple of weeks ago that they're looking into, like, pods where you and your friends can sit in or stand in that circle that's kind of chalked out in the ground, and then there's another pod here and there.
Yeah, that's terrifying. I don't know how that is absolutely terrifying. I mean, I don't know if any of the venues can really work. Because, you know, if you're looking at, like, say, even the Olympia, like, if there's 1,650 people that go in there, if you're going to social distance in there, it's going to be, what, like 400 people maybe you're going to fit in there.
Did they even break even in that case?
I wouldn't say. I can't see it happening unless you charge them fucking €1,000 a fucking ticket. No, sorry if this is on the radio.
I would probably pay €1,000 to go to live music again, to be honest.
jump right on that. But I don't know how it'll work, social distance at gigs. If there's a way, I mean, there's definitely some places that might be able to figure it out. But I don't know. I think I just want it to be back to normal, where everybody's just squashed up against each other and there's no worries and this is all over and people can just dance and meet new people. Because the whole thing about going to a gig is like sharing the experience together, you know? And like meeting new people. I love going to gigs and even going to festivals and stuff and just like meeting randomers on the field and just having a drink and just floating around and having the crack. Whereas if you go, I mean, obviously, in the times we're in, doing the drive-in gigs is just an idea. And like an idea that was racking my brain for the last couple of weeks about how it was going to work. And it will, I hope, work from the first one or the second one. But yeah, when the gigs come back, it's going to be the big giant party, I think. So I'm hoping it's sooner than later, to be honest.
Yeah, I think, we feel the same about when sport comes back properly, the behind closed door stuff. It's grand. It's going to do for now. But everybody wants crowds back and the chanting and the tribalism and meeting new people and having that shared experience. Because that's kind of what draws us all out from the shell that we live in as human beings. Isn't it? That kind of that shared experience, any sense of community.
Exactly. I think that's the whole kind of... I'm trying to turn the TV off from my Apple remote on my phone.
Your door just mysteriously opened behind you as well, Gavin. So you either have a very small dog or a very large ghost in your house.
I actually have a very large dog and a very small ghost in my house.
Oh, hey.
I should see. Turn that off. Let me see. I figure it out. That'd be grand. But yeah. So where were we?
Talking about the community and like how important it is to actually get people together again.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what's going to be the best part of when this is all over, is kind of going back into pubs and going back into it's just going to be a giant party. It's going to be Paddy's Day all over the world, pretty much, isn't it?
It's going to
be amazing.
The leaders of that.
It's going to
be. Let's hope. Let's talk a little bit more about Back to the Future. When did you realize Back to the Future was your hangover movie? Because I'd say, you know, it's like you have to work through a few to go, yeah, this is good. No, I've had enough of that. But if this is something you can return to again and again and again, after however long you've been doing this, it's obviously something special.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, you used to like order a Pizza Max at 7 o'clock at night and just watch all the three Back to the Future movies. When I was doing the gigs in the pubs, I used to do gigs in the pubs when I was like 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. And then, I found it very pleasing just to sit down and just mind-numbingly watch all of them again and again and again and again and again and again. And again. So it's great, crack. But yeah, I love it. And I have all the mad memorabilia as well. I have all the like the crazy, the cars. I have a floating car that I got from Tokyo. It actually floats. It's hilarious. Now I have to find the plug for it, so I can't show you, but it's hilarious. And it has the lights and everything on it. It is gas. I got it on Amazon. It's hilarious. But yeah, it's, I love them. They're class.
It's when we look at Back to the Future, it's 1985. And like, at what age are you when you first approach Back to the Future, or Back to the Future approaches you and you're like, this is my happy place. This is the thing that makes sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I just love the writing in it and even the history of it, like the way somebody else played Marty McFly and they did like half the movie and then they had to reshoot the whole movie again because it wasn't working. Mm. And like, just, I love how it all came about, and there's a really small budget to it. And it's just a class movie. Every scene is just, sometimes you have a favorite movie, you have a favorite thing. Sometimes you skip some scenes, you skip some parts of it. I never really seem to skip any of it. Just kind of watch it straight through every time.
I didn't know that Marty McFly wasn't Michael J. Fox the whole way through. I just assumed that like he was born to play the role. There was somebody else. I didn't know that at all.
Yeah, you know, somebody else, actually. If you look it up online, yeah. I don't know.
Eric Stoltz.
That's the name. Yeah, Eric Stoltz. He's supposed to be really good, but for some reason, it just wasn't working.
Wasn't funny enough.
Yeah, exactly. And Michael J. Fox, he just smashed it. Like, he just, like, obviously, he's hilarious. And even his voice in general when he talks, he just sounds class. And even when he picks up the guitar at the end, I mean, I love music, obviously, but it made me want to play Johnny B. Goode on the guitar. It made me want to like get a red Gibson ES-335 and have it and stuff. But yeah, it's just class. There's everything in the movie that you want. Like, it's class.
Is he any good at music?
Oh, did you not see him? He did a gig with Coldplay, supposedly.
Did he? I didn't see that.
Actually played Johnny B. Goode with Coldplay in some gig in America, I think, recently, like about a year or two ago. I watched it. It's actually class.
Right. I haven't seen that at all because I was never sure whether or not he was. It always seems brilliant because he's just got so much charisma. You know, when somebody is just so charismatic that it covers up any failings that they may have at being a sort of musician. And I often wondered if that was the case with Michael J. Fox. But obviously what you're saying, he's actually got it.
Yeah, I suppose you can kind of tell in the movie that he's obviously miming the guitar bits, but he's playing it. Like, you know, he's definitely playing it. But yeah, I just love it. I think it's class. Like, even the Earth Angel, and he's disappearing and stuff at the end. And it's just whopper buzzer.
Have you decided that there's some point in your life where you're going to treat yourself to that guitar? Does something have to happen, or have you already kind of sneakily been buying one? Is there one off screen here? You're like, actually, I have it.
I don't actually have one. No, there was one I was looking at that's not actually that guitar, but it's a flux capacitor guitar. So it's a big silver flux capacitor, and it has batteries in it, and you turn it on, and it does the whole thing. It's unbelievable. I'll probably be able to find it, but it's unbelievable. It's last looking. But I was trying to get it. I think it's somewhere in Asia you can order it from. So it's like 400 euros. It's probably a crap guitar, but it looks absolutely hilariously amazing, to be honest. It's classic.
But for a film that got the 21st century so hilariously wrong, it was 2013, wasn't it? Or
It was 2015. Maybe it was 2015. It was like May.
2015. May. Sorry, yeah. It would have been like the fives. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, they got to start around though, yeah.
Like, it's amazing how enduring the film is. As in, I don't know, sometimes cinema can transfer poorly down through the ages. If you show this to a young person right now, I'm sure it would still be enthralling, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like, my mate Matt, I was chatting to my mate Matt, who's my drummer in the band. And same, he's watching all these old movies. He's started watching Harry Potter with his youngest. And his youngest is only like 5 or 6. And but same with Back to the Future, started watching Back to the Future, like just loved it. I mean, some of the things they actually got right from the second one, if you watch the second one, there's like, they put the pizza in the oven. Mm. And it's done. Like, this is before, I think it was, and there's another part where they do FaceTime. Mm. And like, nobody had thought of FaceTime yet. And like, so there's certain things they got right. Obviously, they got
the pizza is tiny.
Yeah, the pizza is tiny. And then actually, yeah, I was thinking that obviously that exist. That'd be absolutely class if that exists.
Yeah.
That's why I stopped myself. I was like, nah, that's not, that doesn't exist. But even like the FaceTime and stuff, and like, it's weird the way they had two of like all the new things. Like, they had a fax machine when they had a FaceTime thing. Mm. So like, he's getting fired by his boss and he's talking to him through FaceTime, and then he just gets a fax of like, you're fired. Like, like it's old and new, but yeah. Makes no sense. But yeah, it's gas. And even like, yeah, the tower and all, when Biff is like king of the world, and like it just reminds you of Trump or something. It's very funny. Mm. But
it's such a good comparison. There's also like an unbelievable creepiness around Biff, and actually really distressing scene involving Biff and Marty's mother when it's borderline assault actually in the convertible car. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think, like, in fairness, we've all watched it at Christmas probably last time, so it's actually fresh enough in my memory. But there's a lot of things you couldn't get away with now, or certainly look really, really bad now. Biff was a nasty piece of work, I think it's fair to say.
Oh yeah, there's mad things in it, to be honest. Like, there's that's probably Biff knocking at the second wall now, to be honest. Yeah, there's mad, even like, yeah, in the car, and Biff is, yeah, Marty is actually about to kiss his ma at some point, and like, it's just,
that's also weird.
It's like Friends. If you rewatch Friends, there's certain episodes where you're like, "Ooh, that's you wouldn't say that now, would you?" But yeah, I think it's obviously a different time that you live in now. Like, if you watch anything from back then, like, there's some mad things you'd never get away with, like, ever. But especially that Biff bit when he gets punched in the face by Marty's dad. It's gas, because he's literally just like, and the face on him as well. The face on Marty's dad when he goes, he's just like. It's mad the way they got away with it back then, but not so much now.
The tiny pizzas traveled well, the incest did not travel well, I think it's fair to say.
No, when it comes to
Back to the Future,
never does.
I'm asking just for like quick updates on this, assuming that you know all the inner workings of the plot here. What was the story with the Libyan terrorists? That's like,
weird, and he had the bazooka and everything at the top of the car.
Yeah,
like, it was all For the what you call it, for the green stuff.
The plutonium.
For the plutonium, yeah. It's like, they found me. I don't know how they found me, but they found me. It's like, so random. It's like, why? Why did you rub it off them, Doc? Well, Doc is dodgy. Doc was quite dodgy, to be honest. You know?
He really was.
He was. He had plutonium and everything. Like, it's madness. Madness. And then he just created a garbage one that works with garbage. It's crazy how it all works. But, to be honest, while I'm doing this interview, my whole house is collapsing and my dog is eating whatever's in the kitchen. I left I got like some mugs from Amazon and he's eating the boxes and the TV is on and everybody's banging. I don't know. But it's all happening in the house right now.
Well, look, we'll let you go. But I just wanted to ask, like, you obviously love movies and you've done a little bit of acting. Is that something that you see in as part of your future?
I'm shocking acting. I don't know if I'd ever give it a go. I mean, to me, I'm mad into the musicals and all that, so if I was ever gonna do something like that, it would have to be like a musical and I'd have to sing along the whole time. But I did acting when I was in Brazil. I had to do like a telenovela and I had to like act, but it took me ages because they told me to do it in Portuguese, and obviously my Portuguese north side Dublin accent didn't really work. And like, they just eventually were just like, can you just say, hey Louisa, this song is for you. And I was like, how are you, Louise? This song is for you. It was absolutely hilarious. But I didn't get the acting job the next time. I just had to sing a song. Which was much easier. Singing a song is handy. gas. I don't know. You never know. You never know what the future holds. I might be on EastEnders yet. You never know.
And the Zoom quizzes have obviously been something that has swept the culture, but you kind of seem to have perfected the art. You had over 1,000 people on recently.
It's pure mayhem. It's hilarious. It's so much fun. I had this one part of the quiz about Lionel Richie. Well, actually, it wasn't really about Lionel Richie. It was, I can't remember what exactly, but I just kind of had Lionel Richie in the background. I was like, hello, it's me you're looking for. I don't know why. And it was literally me in a puzzle and you had to find me. And then I just went to the Jacks and waited until some people. But it's gas because the amount of things you can do in it, you can just, I mean, I did a lot of like scavenger hunts. So the last one I did was like run to the Jacks and get like Jacks around, the first person back wins. And then when they come back, it's like, you win nothing. It's just, it's so much fun. It's just seeing people. And every time something funny happened, I was just like, Tom Cruise. It's just gas. It's so much fun. Like, the stuff you can do on it is just hilarious. But it's just a bit of a break for everybody as well, because it's nice because there's loads of kids on it and with their family and everything, just having a great time. And it's gas crack for everybody, you know, to be honest.
Do you think you'll do any of that stuff, like when you're free to go out and you're free to leave your house? Has any of this been so much crack that you're going to go, actually, I'm going to do a little bit of this, like once a month or once every 6 months, or have a special giveaway for whatever? Like, is there something that you think that might be part of who you become as a performer after this?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I mean, the Zoom is just a new way of being on social media and a new way of chatting to your fans, really, you know, it's and bringing people together. So anything that does that, is it works anytime, no matter if there's a lockdown or anything, you know. I might do a live one at an actual gig. I'll do like a pre-quiz. I'll support myself as a quiz master, and then I'll do the live gig afterwards, which could be absolutely hilarious. Like, actually, that'd be terrifying for me, actually. I don't know if that many people looking at me doing a quiz, that'd be shockingly, that'd be terrifying. No, I wouldn't do that.
That'd be class.
But stay on Zoom. No, I leave it to, like, oh no, that's terrifying.
You could ask the audience, literally, and it would be like everybody in the audience answering.
Yeah, imagine asking like 13,000 people treating me in a run to the Jacks and get some bog roll there.
Stampede.
Oh, be gas. Soon enough, it'd be all back to normal. Be
gas. Soon enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, listen, you mentioned Boxes. I think, was it the 12th of May you released it? And you had a million listens on Spotify and a million views on YouTube within a week with that. It suggests that the appetite for your music is even stronger than it's ever been.
Yeah, you know what? It's mad. I've never seen something move like that on YouTube before, ever, for me. So I mean, usually it takes a lot longer than that. But it seems people seem to be liking the song and kind of seeing themselves in the song a bit, because it is very just a really simple message in the song about just following your dreams and like just doing like what you want and kind of going against the grain. And if anybody tells you to do it, not do it. To just tell them to back off. So it's very simple message of a song. It's a really short song. So I've been dying to release it for ages. I mean, it was done 3 years ago. I've been sitting on it for ages. So yeah, it's grand. It's a good L.
Was it totally autobiographical?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I wrote, like, there's a lot of lyrics in it. The first lyric is like, went to the wrong school wearing the wrong shoes. I mean, I went to Deco's in Cabra, and if you wore like Nikes or like brown shoes into school, you had to go to the principal's office and wear slippers for the rest of the day. So like, I kind of got a lot of the lyrics from that kind of stuff, and like, say three Hail Marys and everything, Babel would be gone. We went to like it's obviously a Catholic school. So like, even though they never had my size, I'm 11 and a half shoes, and they never had my slipper size anyway, so it was grand. But like, yeah, it's just hilarious. Like, even in school, I used to have hair down to my arse in school. I used to have like really long, massive, like locks, like insane, going down like Robert Plant kind of hair. And I used to tie it back, and I used to be going by all the classrooms like a goldfish because I had to tie it back. It's hilarious. But yeah, I mean, it's just about following whatever you want to do, and not really, because it kind of bored me when teachers or anybody would tell me that music is a hard kind of graft and it's a hard thing to do, because I didn't really care if it was hard, because I just wanted to play anyway. So like, it kind of came from that aspect of it, because it didn't really matter what anybody said. I just wanted to do that one thing and nothing else. So that, and watch Back to the Future all the time.
It's a cool combination, turns out.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Well, listen, Gav, congratulations on the new gigs. And honestly, like, anybody who's taking risks and trying to come up with ideas for everybody to get together again, I think has to be lauded. So it is brave, and we wish you every success with it. Thank you, man.
Thank you very much, man. Cheers for having us on, lads. And I'll see you hopefully at one. If you bring the 100%. Oh, you can't bring the camper. I was gonna say bring a camper with you, but you can't. But anyway, thanks for having us on, lads.
Cheers, Gavin.
Thanks a million, man. Yeah, great stuff from Gavin there. A reminder, of course, the OTB Culture Hall of Fame is with you every week. It's brought to you in association with Now TV, where you can stream every episode of the unmissable new show Gangs of London on the Now TV Entertainment Pass, which also has a 14-day free trial that you can avail of. Stream unmissable shows like Rocket Man and Lion King, Game of Thrones and Parks and Recreation, or Inside Out and Toy Story 4. You can find all of our previous episodes as well on the OTB Podcast Network. So with Lenny Abramson last week, we've had Stephanie Preisner. We had a great discussion about Rocky 3 with Andy Lee, and loads more good stuff. The OTB Culture Hall in association with Now TV. You'll get it as well on our YouTube channel. We'll see you next week.
The OTB Culture Hall of Fame.
Brought to you by Now TV. Watch whatever you're in the mood for.
OTB AM.
With Aviva,
Ireland's largest insurer, celebrating 10 years of iconic sporting moments at the Aviva Stadium.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.